This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning and welcome to AM. I'm Kim Landers. On the program today, is the US becoming the new epicenter of the coronavirus pandemic as cities like New York remain in strict lockdown?
You know, you start hearing the disperse and please go back to your home, and New York has taken on a bit of an Armageddon feel.
And back home, are supermarkets doing enough to prevent the spread of the virus?
I certainly grabbed my own receipt, making sure I'm not touching the counters or anything, and check out people, pick up and scan your items. That's a concern for me.
We'll hear from the Chief Operating Officer of Coles soon. Australia's economy and way of life is about to take another hit, with new shutdowns aimed at slowing the spread of coronavirus. Weddings and funerals will be limited to very small groups, and more businesses are being told to close their doors. Even a family barbecue at home is off limits. Here's political reporter Jade McMillan.
Emerging from a national cabinet meeting with state and territory leaders, the Prime Minister revealed more drastic steps in the coronavirus fight.
These are heartbreaking events in our nation's history and story.
From midnight tonight, more venues, including beauty salons and museums, will have to close, and real estate auctions will be stopped. Hairdressers will be allowed to stay open, but they'll have to follow social distancing rules, and appointments can't last for more than half an hour. Weddings will be restricted to the couple, their celebrant and two witnesses, and funerals will have a limit of just 10 people. Chief Medical Officer Brendan Murphy says the new measures are draconian but necessary.
We are very worried about the rate of rise in the number of cases of coronavirus in Australia, particularly over the last few days. It is a very, very steep growth.
Scott Morrison has also announced Australians will be banned from travelling overseas. People are also being urged not to go out unless they have to. For example, if they can't work from home or if they need to get supplies or medical attention. Exercising outside in small groups is okay, but inviting people over to your home isn't.
So that means barbecues of lots of friends or even family, extended family, coming together to celebrate one-year-old birthday parties and all these sorts of things. We can't do those things now.
The Prime Minister still insists schools should stay open, and he'll speak to education unions today about how to keep teachers safe. Extra resources are also being poured into Centrelink, as an overwhelming number of people who've lost their jobs spend hours in lines or on the phone struggling to get help.
Due to the coronavirus, we are dealing with a lot more calls.
I would say to Australians, yes, we are terribly sorry. But at the same time, we are asking Australians, even in these most difficult of circumstances, to be patient.
And Brendan Murphy has warned that if community transmission of the virus gets worse, more restrictions could be on the way.
We have to get people to take this seriously. We have to change the way we interact as human beings in our society for quite a long time.
Chief Medical Officer Brendan Murphy ending that report from Jade McMillan. Well, another day, another round of restrictions, and this latest batch is confusing some people. And there are still many health professionals who believe it doesn't go far enough. Reporter Isabel Rowe joins me. Isabel, what's been the reaction from doctors about these new restrictions?
Well, it has been mixed. And so we've heard this morning from high-profile GP, Dr. Karen Phelps. She has welcomed the restrictions. She understands it is really difficult for the Prime Minister, who clearly is getting his own medical advice, but she does believe that the messaging around it has been quite unclear. There is also a group of 6,000 doctors who've signed a petition calling for a lockdown like we've seen in Britain and in Italy. And they're being led by intensive care specialist Greg Kelly, who says Australia is tracking the same way as those countries in terms of infection rates. He's spoken to the ABC after hearing the Prime Minister's announcement last night, which does allow for some non-essential industries to continue. Here is his reaction.
The further restrictions are welcome, but unfortunately they still fall short of what international experience has proved is needed to stop the transmission of the COVID-19 virus. The speed of increase of the virus is actually increasing, and the window of opportunity to control this is very narrow. So we feel that right now, today and tomorrow in Australia, is a really critical time to take strong measures and stronger measures to control the spread of this virus while we still can and avert disaster.
Isabel, in relation to the beauty industry, a place like a nail salon has to close, but a hairdresser's can stay open under certain restrictions. What's been the reaction to that?
So the additional measures in the restrictions announced last night close beauty salons, waxing places, massage parlours, unless they're an allied health service like a physio. But the Prime Minister does say that hair salons can stay open for haircuts if they restrict the time to 30 minutes. So this will obviously have a huge restriction on what you can actually get done and will affect the industry. So I spoke to Melanie Coombs, who's a hairdresser herself and the national organiser of the industry union Hairstylists Australia.
The 30-minute mark, you know, it's going to be quite difficult because, you know, that's most hairdressers usually take about 30 minutes to 45 minutes for a style haircut. So realistically, in the 30-minute time frame, you're only going to be able to complete a men's haircut. So barbershops should still be okay. The only thing that I'm really concerned about is the colouring in the industry, as majority of the industry rely on their colour clients that bring in the majority of the flow of cash so they can pay for, you know, their staff, products, rent and everything like that. So the only thing I can think of is that they'd be able to apply the roots tint and then tell the client to go home and rinse it off at home. So a majority of the industry is going to struggle with that 30-minute time management, although I think we'll be able to pull through quite well because any hairdresser that's worked through Christmas can bloody pull off anything.
How have hairdressers been dealing with the hygiene issues? Because obviously the recommendation is to be 1.5 metres away from people.
We do have, we do have some ethical salons out there that are doing the right thing. Some of our ethical salons within HSA have actually removed every second chair in their salon. So they do have that 1.5 space between each client, which is great. But there are some salons out there that are still struggling because they are smaller as well. But, we do have to try and make things work for the better health of the community and the better health of ourselves and our staff.
National Organiser of Hairstylists Australia, Melanie Coombs, speaking to Isabel Rowe. Well, as we know, cafes and restaurants have been hit hard by the restrictions stopping people from being inside their premises. They can still offer takeaway, but last night one business that was doing just that was abruptly shut down. Tess Robins is the owner of The Rio, a former milk bar that had been transformed into a restaurant in the suburb of Summer Hill in Sydney's inner west. She's been speaking to Nick Grimm.
Originally we were contemplating just shutting down completely. However, given the options in place set out by the government, the support by the government and also for my employees, it wasn't really a viable step to take. So we thought we'd move into the world of takeaway, which gives people some sanity at their doorstep and also allows for the distance to occur.
So delivering meals and alcohol?
Yes. Yeah, so a full experience, a full Rio experience on your doorstep.
So what happened when you tried to do that?
We kicked it off last night and it was going brilliantly and everyone was very, very excited about it and happy about it. And then by 7 o'clock, we were shut down by the local licensing officers.
Why? What reason did they give?
Their reason was that they abide by legislation and not by the statement of regulatory intent. So they stated that they didn't need to allow us. They didn't have to allow us to do this, and that because our legislation, our license states that we're an on-premise venue, we can't do it.
So you're a business that's seen your trade decimated by these restrictions. You're trying to find a way to trade through this problem, but you've been shut down.
Yes.
How does that make you feel?
Beyond angry. I think being in hospitality, we've always been viewed as the nanny state and I've certainly have been in hospitality since I was 18, so I'm well aware that we're always going to be the nanny state. However, given the extreme circumstances that we're in at present, I thought that if everyone else is on board, government's on board, the liquor and gaming is on board, there's no reason why our officers, our officials can't be on board with allowing the little Aussie battlers to continue to make a couple of dollars here and there so then they can survive.
What is this crisis doing to your business and for your staff?
I'm a single mum with two kids. So for me, it's crushing a household. The business has taken 2.5 years to build to where it is, and 6 months of closure will mean that we have to rebuild all over again. And my staff are still having to pay rent because although they've been given the option for New Start, if I do make them redundant, they haven't put in place any holds on or rental or loan repayments for the little guys. So they still have to make money, and $550 a week is not going to cover rent in Sydney.
And just to clarify, this wasn't because you had too many people inside your premises.
No. We literally have shut up shop to the point that no one is allowed on premise. If you'd like a takeaway, you have to stand outside on the footpath. And even then we have signs and gaps, and there was never more than one person outside on the footpath last night. Inside, I have three staff, and all three staff are in different rooms. And the deliveries were dealt with gloves and a mask on. And we're insanely hygienic premise regardless of COVID-19. So it was certainly a bit of a shock to the system that we weren't even able to continue regardless of everything that we were doing.
Tess Robins, the owner of Sydney restaurant The Rio, speaking with Nick Grimm. Well, the coronavirus pandemic is accelerating, with the World Health Organization saying 85% of new cases in the past 24 hours have been in Europe and the United States. The WHO is warning the US has the potential to be the new epicenter. But despite that, President Donald Trump says he wants the country to be back to normal by Easter, just over 2 weeks away. Washington correspondent David Lipson reports.
Ryan Hamilton from Newcastle, north of Sydney, is emerging from a 12-day nightmare, alone in his New York apartment, infected with COVID-19.
Nothing like it. You just are incredibly weak. You don't have any mental faculty. I'd have a phone conversation with a friend and I need to rest for 4 or 5 hours after that.
As the 35-year-old struggled with the symptoms, with only the TV for company, the city was shutting down around him.
You know, cops, sirens and loudspeakers in the background. My first thought was it was on the screen, but then, you know, you start hearing the disperse and please go back to your home, and New York has taken on a bit of an Armageddon feel. Things like the convention centre being turned into a mobile hospital run by the army. Businesses are starting to board their shop fronts up with plywood and things like that. So it certainly has that feeling of that this is going to get worse before it gets better.
That's certainly the view of New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo, who, despite the widespread lockdowns, is still seeing the rate of new infections doubling every 3 days in his state.
We're not slowing it, and it is accelerating on its own. One of the forecasters said to me, we were looking at a freight train coming across the country. We're now looking at a bullet train.
And the governor's getting increasingly desperate in his pleas for the US federal government to help with more life-saving ventilators.
You want a pat on the back for sending 400 ventilators? What are we going to do with 400 ventilators when we need 30,000 ventilators?
He's not getting a sympathetic ear from the White House.
Well, we sent them ventilators, and they could have had 15 or 16,000. All they had to do is order them 2 years ago, but they decided not to do it. They can't blame us for that.
President Donald Trump has enacted emergency war powers that enable him to force factories to make medical equipment, but he still hasn't used them. He says companies are moving on their own, and he appears to be firming up in his plans to lift restrictions by Easter Sunday, 19 days from now.
Our country wants to go back to work. Many people, in my opinion, more people are going to die if we allow this to continue. We have to go back to work. Our people want to go back to work.
Medical advisers say that could cost tens of thousands of American lives. This is David Lipson in Washington for AM.
In Europe, Italy remains the epicentre with more than 60,000 confirmed cases, another 40,000 in Spain. Here's Europe correspondent Bridget Brennan.
In Madrid, the city's ice skating rink has been converted into a makeshift morgue. It's another sign that Spain is losing its battle against the deadly coronavirus.
For me, like seeing things such as that in the paper and on the TV, it just seems awful, because there's really no choice though, because there's so many people have passed away and they need a facility.
Helen Starcer is an Australian living in Madrid. She's told AM she's been living through strict stay-at-home conditions for weeks.
If you're going outside to the pharmacy, for instance, you have to travel with your documentation, and the police, they're patrolling in cars, and they'll ask you for your documentation.
In Spain, each day this crisis intensifies. A convention centre has been converted into a hospital with more than 5,000 beds. And there are stories emerging of unimaginable horror.
Y contundentes con el trato que
Defence Minister Margarita Robles says soldiers who've been disinfecting aged care homes have found abandoned residents living alongside bodies of those killed by the virus. In Italy, where the virus first took hold in Europe, exasperated mayors are begging residents to stay home.
Dovete stare a casa! Non avete capito che la gente muore!
You must stay home, Mayor Massimiliano Prosciutti told residents in a video message. Don't you understand that people are dying? Hours after the UK introduced a lockdown, London's underground network was still teeming with passengers this morning. Health Secretary Matt Hancock warns there could be tougher restrictions to come.
Home is now the front line. And in this national effort, working together, we can defeat this disease. Everyone has a part to play.
This is Bridget Brennan reporting in London for AM.
And on AM, it's 8:15. As we move to the next stage of restrictions here in Australia, one of the few places you'll come into contact with other people is the supermarket. Many employees are worried that not enough is being done to keep them out of harm's way. Bridget Fitzgerald reports.
As the pubs, cafes and gyms close, this is one of the last places where Australians can bank on coming into contact with large groups of people. These shoppers told AM they're making trips to get groceries as quick and infrequent as possible.
There's a lot of people in a close area. We're not really separated, not by that 1.5 metre recommendation.
It's making sure I'm not touching the counters or anything, and check out people, pick up and scan your items. That's a concern for me, that they're touching things that you're carrying back home into your environment.
How much sympathy do you have for people still working in the supermarket?
I wouldn't do it.
Unfortunately, not everyone gets that choice.
Supermarket workers are essential workers and we're on the front lines of this pandemic.
This Coles worker didn't want to give his real name, so we'll call him Jack. And while changes have been made, Jack doesn't think the retailer has been doing enough to protect its workforce.
The only things that we have at the moment are hand sanitizer, antibacterial wipes for the trolleys, and a couple of posters about hand washing and whatever. And that's really the only things they've done. And that's really up to, you know, customers and workers alike to do it.
Well, in the last couple of weeks, the concerns that have been raised have increased, but also the nature of them have become more serious.
Gerard Dwyer is the National Secretary of the SDA, the Shop Distributive and Allied Employees Association, which represents retail, fast food and warehouse workers. The union leader says his members are worried about how to maintain a safe distance from customers, along with the availability of protective items like hand sanitizer and alcohol wipes.
We want to actually see an exponential move to cash-free across retail. We want the signage on the floor to ensure the social distancing, and we need lots of sanitizer available.
Then there's the problem of how to deal with members of the public who do the wrong thing. Both major supermarkets have increased security in recent weeks. Now, in a bid to reduce interaction between the public and its staff, Woolworths has announced it will install plexiglass screens across all of its manned checkouts in coming weeks. It's a move that's been welcomed by the union, although at the moment there's no indication its competitor Coles will follow suit. And despite representations from the Shopworkers Union, neither of the major supermarkets has committed to go cash-free. Shoppers, meanwhile, are doing what they can.
I made sure I was served by someone that had a mask on.
Supermarket shopper Jennifer ending that report from Bridget Fitzgerald. Well, one of Australia's biggest supermarket chains admits it could be weeks before supplies on the shelves are back to normal as the unprecedented demand continues. I spoke earlier with Matt Swindells, the Chief Operating Officer for Coles. At Swindells, we're frequently told there's no shortage of food, that it's a logistics problem for many products not being on our shelves. So when are people going to be able to shop normally?
I think it's not so much the logistics problem or a supply problem. It's really a problem of demand and time. The demand spike that we saw 3 weeks ago, and it actually ran for a 3-week duration, was bigger than a Christmas period, and the supply chain is not structured to execute such volumes without serious planning in advance. We would normally plan Christmas 6 months out. Thankfully, good to see the Australian public start to normalise their demand levels.
You say start, though, but people are still hoarding and leaving nothing for everyone else. That's still a big problem. Do you think someone like Coles will have to put more limits on more products like you have with things like frozen veggies and canned food?
Yeah, what we see is counterintuitive. The more restrictions we put on, sometimes the more it actually lifts the demand. And I think what's really important is that the message that's out there is one of calm, and that the customers understand that there isn't a supply or a food problem. It is a timing issue of restocking the supply chain. We've implemented 3 new distribution centres in Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria in 6 days. We actually now will put down a further 2, one in South Australia, one in Western Australia this week. And we've re-engineered our supply chain to flow more volume faster. So the amount of stock going through the system is about 50% higher than it normally would be. And the demand has come back. It's still way higher than it normally is, but it's not at the peaks that were breaking some parts of that chain previously. But I would say, Kim, your point is absolutely right, which is, you know, customers can still go to stores at time of day and say, well, nothing's happening. You can still go into a store and find that the shelves haven't got the stock on that you want. It is getting better, so the stores are fuller for longer, but we're not back to normal levels, and that will take weeks. And then finally, you are right, some people are still hoarding. Our teams see it and they feel it, and the teams know their customers well, and they know who's going in and coming back and going in and coming back. And as much as we try and stop that, because we want to give everything to the people who need it, we do need that cooperation from the public. So I would ask again, please, only purchase what you need.
Well, would you consider perhaps trying to limit the number of people who can be in a shop at a particular time, or allocate particular shopping days based on your surname or your street number?
Yeah, so we're introducing this week, and actually it starts tomorrow, we're introducing expanding community hour to take care of our paramedics, nurses, doctors, hospital ambulance staff, police, so all of the emergency services, anyone who has an AHPRA card, actually. And we had lots of requests from particularly nurses and doctors saying, I can see what's coming in my workload. They can see what's happening overseas. They don't need the stress and anxiety of then worrying about finding their food and groceries. And they asked us if we could help. And in that instance, we've diverted community hour on Tuesdays and Thursdays to those groups for that very reason.
For your workers, will Coles install plexiglass to protect them?
We're working daily with the Department of Health, and I think what's very important on this issue is that we take the science and the facts from the professionals, and we listen to their advice and direction and we act on it. And I speak with the Department of Health daily. Yesterday we had a conversation around gloves and masks, for example, and what is the Department of Health's guidance. They are very clear in that it is all about sanitising your hands. We're pushing 12,000 litres of hand sanitizer to our stores a week, and we're asking our team members to sanitize their hands throughout the day. That is the best way of preventing this disease. Some of these PPE measures may look like they are protecting you, but the science would not necessarily back it up. I would also add that we would ask our customers, and we're definitely seeing the social distancing now landing in the community. We ask them to keep a trolley's length apart, And so far, it would seem that people are starting to follow that protocol. We'd ask them not to come in if they don't feel well and to wash their hands before entering the store. The protocols that the health department would say are the right ones are being followed thoroughly. I think it's important that we don't go down a road of then implementing what I would call new ideas or different pieces of PPE that might make people feel better but then relaxes the essential process, which is hand sanitisation.
Can I ask you a final question about your workforce? Are you fast-tracking any applications from stood-down Qantas workers to help meet the demand?
Yeah, we put out a request for 5,000 extra casuals last week, and we were absolutely overwhelmed with subscriptions right across industry from different sectors. We've changed our protocols for onboarding for the recruitment process so we could fast-track any application that's come through that process. Certainly Qantas would have some people in that category that would have applied. We've not targeted them specifically, but there are a lot of people who need work, and where we have work, we're making sure that we can get them going quickly.
Matt Swindells, thank you very much for talking to AM.
Thank you, Kim.
That's Matt Swindells, the Chief Operating Officer for Coles. The Tokyo Olympics will be postponed for 1 year after the Japanese government and the International Olympic Committee agreed that it was the best way forward. Here's North Asia correspondent Jake Sturmer.
There isn't much that the new coronavirus hasn't delayed, disrupted, or dismantled. The Olympic and Paralympic Games are now on that ever-growing list. Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe made the announcement late last night.
As the host of the Tokyo Olympics, for the athletes of the world, for them to be able to compete in the best environment and also for the games to be one which is safe and worry-free for spectators, I asked if it would be possible to consider postponing the games for approximately 1 year.
Mr. Abe says the International Olympic Committee's president, Thomas Bach, agreed with him 100%. Pressure on the IOC and its president had been accelerating in recent days, with Australia and Canada refusing to participate if the Games went ahead this July. Japan's Olympic Minister Seiko Hashimoto says she hopes this decision provides some reassurance for athletes who've been trying to train in the middle of restrictive lockdowns.
With so many unknowns, it must have been very concerning and worrisome for athletes to try and maintain their physical condition. So I appreciate that the decision was made.
On the streets of Tokyo, locals are largely supportive of the decision. This man says it's a reasonable decision because if there's any fear still, then the athletes and the spectators won't be able to enjoy the Olympic and Paralympic Games. Inside a ramen noodle shop near the National Stadium, this owner says it's better to have more time to prepare so they can make sure that there are things like enough toilets. He says he'll do everything he can to support the new dates. Sorting out those new dates will be a significant logistical hurdle. There are huge costs involved, and organisers will have to find weeks that work with all of the international sporting federations and broadcast rights holders. For now, all of the events that had already been drastically scaled back around this year's games, like the torch relay, have been cancelled. But the flame will stay in Japan as a symbol of commitment and hope, according to Thomas Bach. The idea is that it's the light at the end of the tunnel. This is Jake Sturmer in Tokyo reporting for AM.
Wall Street has surged on expectations that the US Senate will pass a massive emergency rescue package to protect American households and businesses reeling from the coronavirus lockdown. With more on that, I was joined a short time ago by our senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan. Peter, this might be a bit of good news after weeks of heavy losses around the world, but will it last?
Well, good morning, Kim. That is the big question, given the gut-wrenching volatility we've felt during this crisis. But the Dow Jones Industrial Average rocketed to close 11.3% higher this morning. That's the biggest one-day percentage gain since 1933 at the height of the Great Depression. There were double-digit gains for battered companies like Chevron, McDonald's, Boeing and Nike, which have been hit hard and will be hit even harder with predictions that economic growth in the United States could crash by as much as 30% as the coronavirus puts the economy into a deep freeze. So far, there's no agreement between the White House and Congress on a proposed $2 trillion US dollar rescue package. Democrats want more help for individuals, while Donald Trump's package is more aimed at corporate America. There's also unprecedented intervention by the US Federal Reserve, which is unleashing trillions of dollars to underwrite a creaking financial system, measures exceeding the depths of the global financial crisis. But market analyst Brian Tora is doubtful about a lasting recovery until the number of new COVID-19 cases peaks and flatten out.
The message seems to be that because the Fed has basically said it is going to do whatever it takes, it will be all right in the end. But this is a hell of a shock. We're certainly in for a global recession. We could even be in for a global depression. Much will depend upon how quickly things turn round. In other words, how fast this pandemic is brought under control and how quickly things return to normal. But I suspect this isn't going to be a V-shaped recovery. It's going to take a lot longer longer than that.
London stockbroker Brian Tora, and before him our reporter Peter Ryan. Virgin Australia says it's standing down 80% of its staff as the airline deals with this fallout. It's also cutting domestic flights by 90%. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Kim Landers.
Hi, I'm Stephen Stockwell.
And I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre, and we're from the ABC's daily news podcast, The Signal. It's not necessarily easy getting tested for coronavirus. You have to tick quite a few boxes before it happens, because there isn't an infinite number of kits. And as the caseload grows, that need's only going to get more acute, unless we find a cheaper and simpler way. Now, some Sydney biohackers claim they've done exactly that.
Today, how this test, that doesn't even need to be done in a lab, could have the potential to change the fight against COVID-19. Look for The Signal on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.